Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Mark St. Pierre wrote, Of Common Birth, Dakota Sons in Vietnam. It's a work of creative nonfiction, yet inspired by the true story of two South Dakotans. The book draws on archival research and first-person interviews to tell the story of a Lakota man and a white man serving their country in Southeast Asia. Mark St. Pierre joins us from Kyle now. Mark, welcome to In the Moment.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I want to talk about the book, but I want to begin by talking about your process and where the sort of catalyst came from. How did you get interested in this topic and find out that it was something you wanted to write about?
Well, I think as a writer, you try to, it's probably ego or something, but you try to find projects where there's not much literature, where you're trying to contribute something that is fresh or different or wouldn't be done otherwise, and maybe sort of a standalone. And I think if you look in Native American or American literature, there are very few in-depth stories that involve Native veterans or soldiers. We all know about Ira Hayes, but that's about it. And it's really, so I was sitting in a cafe in Eagle Butte, and a guy was eating breakfast. I knew he was a Vietnam vet, you know, we're all that generation. And he got up rather angry from his table and left without finishing his breakfast. And I went over and looked at the newspaper spread out before him. And it was the announcement of the bronze statue for the Vietnam Memorial, which was a Hispanic, white, and black soldier. And I took a cigarette from the man that owned the cafe, and I went outside and I kind of made a vow, a prayer, that I would receive the energy and the help to create a story that would help to balance the record. So that's the short version.
Why do you think there are so few in-depth stories told with a Native American character or from a Native American perspective about Vietnam? Because they certainly were not underrepresented as people who served.
I don't know. I really can't answer that except to say that there is a separation of the two people in South Dakota that's fairly dramatic. And I wrote that book at a time when Governor Mickelson was, or I started writing it at a time when Governor Mickelson was talking about the need for reconciliation. And so 50% of the energy of the motivation for that book came from the dream I had for the finished book that would take non-Indians into a Native veteran and home and reservation and life experience and understand him deeply as a human being. And vice versa, that the Native audience would read about a white soldier and his background and where he came from and his life story and crawl into his skin, and that the book would have a, you know, a reconciliatory you know, feeling or impact, I guess. But I'm not sure a lot of people have ever read the book, so that may have not have worked.
All right, it's called...
But that was a motivation, for sure.
Of Uncommon Birth, Dakota Sons in Vietnam. Read it now. So we'll continue talking about it, but if you're just tuning in, my guest is Mark St. Pierre. It's hard to make sure that a book finds the hands of the right readers and to even hear back from people who have read the book. So let's talk a little bit about your research and the kinds of conversations and interviews you were doing to really fully, you know, prepare yourself for the writing part. How was that process for you?
Well, I had a close friend who is one of the main characters. He's a real person. The only thing changed is his last name. And he had a rather interesting experience with other young men from South Dakota in basic training and you know, told me that really that was the first time in his life that he ever got to know any Native people at any level whatsoever. And it was really thought-provoking for him to get to know these guys. And I think in 1969 in South Dakota, there was that kind of distance. And, you know, he told me one time that he grew up in Deadwood Lee, and he said the only thing that he knew about, you know, Native people was that some of the guys would smoke cigarettes at halftime in a basketball game and still kick our butts. That was it. That was it.
And so this is Dale we're talking about, right? Is that the character in the book? Living and being with somebody in a basic training or combat or military, you know, culture and lifestyle and living arrangements is very different than what you experience in South Dakota. Is that something that took him by surprise?
Yes. In the book, it talks about the induction center in Sioux Falls and how, there were so many Native kids at the induction center in relationship to non-Native kids that the Lakota guys were joking to each other, I think, about them running out of white kids or white boys or something. And then, you know, the white character looking at these two Native recruits and thinking, gee, they don't even look old enough to shave.
Right.
They don't have any hair on their face, which, you know... So, I mean, it's a discovery of the people who live next door and an understanding. You come to an understanding of their humanity and maybe also come to an understanding of, you know, how history has created this deep inequality and this divide.
Right. So Dale wanted his name changed, or you changed his name in the book.
Mm-hmm.
How come? What was his hesitation?
He's a very private person.
Yeah.
I think he felt he took great risks to share his story with me. And at the last minute, he requested that. And out of respect for that, I changed his last name.
What sort of risks do you think? What's at stake?
He said, I don't need people finding me or telling me I'm a war hero or you know. He just said, very, very private person.
Right. What other kind of research did you do? Tell me more about where else learning about...
I received a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship in Creative Nonfiction, and with the prize money, part of it, I went to Suitland, Maryland. Another of the men in the book, there's actually the story is very much about four South Dakotans, in fact. And the wife, Mary... Gilbert up in Hitchcock, South Dakota, the wife of Ron Gilbert, got fascinated when I went up to interview him, and she began to research, and 6 months later she let me know that the records I needed to reconstruct this tour of duty probably were at the Suitland Military Record Center in Suitland, Maryland. So my wife and kids and we all went out there and camped. A friend of mine at the Smithsonian he's the head of ethnology at the time, loaned us his house for a couple of weeks. Right downtown, and I took the bus every day to Suitland, which has been described as the size of a schoolhouse above ground, but 7 football fields underground.
Hmm.
And it's all the death and service records for every man and woman that's ever served in the United States military. And there I was able to find an incredible amount of records for Frank Jellicoe's tour. His records were complete. I mean, there was everything. I mean, boxes of steel-edged cardboard files with everything from medical reports to 24, after-action reports to situation reports. Situation reports are every 15 minutes, the radio operator in the platoon calls rear area and reports either nothing going on, which is a negative situation, negative sit rep. So I went through an entire year of those for Frank, so I understood every day what he went through and where he was and what was being reported. I looked at all the medical reports. The after-action reports are the summaries of battles and actions and movements and what was learned or lost in those. For the Dale character, his records were a lot more spotty, and they either haven't been... pulled out of boxes in the basement of Suitland because they have a small staff, or there's a possibility they went into the China Sea or whatever. I mean, there was enough there, but not like Frank. And then that was fascinating because I could interview Dale. I could not interview Frank.
Right, right.
So for like a stroke of luck.
For those of our listeners who have not read the book or interested in digging into the story, and again, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking with Mark St. Pierre, and the book is Of Uncommon Birth, Dakota Sons in Vietnam. We're talking about Frank Jellicoe, and what do we need to know about him at the beginning of the book to really understand his journey?
Well, he's a man of his time, and he's a... high school dropout. I think he probably finished the 10th grade. It says in the, I think, in the book. And was working as a Head Start teacher's aide to try and help his family get by. And this is the very beginning of the, you know, war on poverty and the beginning of the Head Start centers. And as a young man, I mean, he was a lead singer of an all-Indian rock and roll band called the Sioux Playboys, some of whom are still living, at least one or two. And, you know, probably was a rather interesting and energetic and curious person. I did show a first draft of the book to one of his lifetime friends, and the guy, after he read the book, just couldn't believe I had never met Frank, which is a great compliment and helps your courage when you're trying to finish it. I really wanted to write something that was a great read and compelling and at points exciting and frightening. And, you know, I was really, you know, I wanted the book to, you know, to be a very good purchase for someone that loves to read.
Right. You've written eloquently about the challenges, the sort of unique or specific challenges of Native Americans coming home from Vietnam, and how that really wasn't, you know, the challenges they might have in Vietnam weren't fully considered. Let's talk a little bit about that and tell me what you learned.
Well, these young men went off and fought for the country from a community that was very impoverished, and they returned to that same kind of impoverishment. You know, whether South Dakotans want to admit it or not, they left a home reservation in a state that didn't value them very much as people. And when they came back from serving this country, whether in a box or missing a limb or psychologically scarred, they returned to the exact same conditions that they left. An America that's less about them than it is about other people.
At the beginning of our conversation, you talked about a man sort of leaving in anger or distress over a newspaper article that featured this memorial statue commemorating those who were in Vietnam. So let's talk about the wall and that statue, and, you know, the potential for it to heal and, you know, have names. There's a rubbing, an etching of Frank's name in the back of your book. What did you find out about how that memorial, you know, served others and fell short in that service?
Well, it's remarkable. I think anybody who goes to Washington that's of the boomer generation, because that war, the Kennedy assassination, Martin Luther King, the war, all of this shaped our generation's outlook on life and politics and the world. And you stand at the wall, and I don't know anybody that wouldn't get emotional. I get emotional thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Here's the young men and women from our generation who went to that war. And what was that war really about? And was it about rubber plantations that were owned by Michelin being returned to Michelin? What was it really all about? And, it, you know, so you go to the wall and you just see the huge sacrifice. And the wall is constantly decorated with things that are left behind by friends and relatives and well-wishers. And the Smithsonian collects that stuff up at the end of every day. And it's preserved permanently. So it's just very powerful. The statue of the three soldiers is a beautiful statue. There is a nurse's memorial. Glenna Goodacre, I think, was the sculptress or sculptor. And the soldier that the nurse is treating is a Native American. A lot of people don't notice that. But so she tried to, in her own way, make a slight correction to the memorial.
To the absence of the representation of a Native American amongst those three individuals depicted. How did the research and the writing of this book sort of change you?
Well, I don't know if it changed me, but, you know, I worked just collecting the information and doing the interviews was probably 10 years. Nonstop. I mean, although I came to big breaches in time when I couldn't move forward because I couldn't get access to records or people. at Suitland, Maryland Military Records Center, I came across the day that Frank was killed, and on that situation report were the dog tags of everybody in that firefight, and most of them were WIA or KIA. I sent a letter to the Veterans Administration, and months and months and months went by, and I got one day, 6 months later, a lady called me up, and she said, "My name is Mary Beth Farinelli. My husband was Frank's commanding officer in Vietnam, and he's sitting on the kitchen floor crying his eyes out. But when he's ready, he'll call you and talk to you." So I actually had an additional powerful stroke of luck for all the hard times writing the book when I found his commanding officer, who was the only survivor of an entire company.
And what was that conversation like, Mark?
I had sent him maybe, but I don't. Right. I had sent him, I think, some drafts, and he was amazed at how accurate, I think. But I was looking at maps, and I had coordinates, and I had all kinds of things in front of me. And I think he felt, he said, out of all the men, he served two terms, and he said, out of all the men I served with, if anybody deserves a book written about them, it's definitely Frank.
Hmm.
He was crying.
This is a big question that we'll just close with here, so you don't have to answer it comprehensively, but I'm wondering if you have an idea. As we look at 2017 and what the legacy of Vietnam was here in South Dakota, what's the first thing that comes to your mind to sort of say, oh, it's this. This is part of it.
Hmm. Maybe a whole generation of people that many of whom would question sending young South Dakota men and women to a war unless they fully understand the need for that kind of sacrifice. I think the Vietnam War left our generation skeptical. And I think it is a lasting impact because there's still a lot of us around. And so I don't know. You hit me with a surprise question. no one's ever asked me that. I can tell you this, that every South Dakota Vietnam vet that has read the book has thanked me just amazingly. Mm-hmm. And they felt universally that they felt it was the best story of a Vietnam experience they'd ever read. And these are guys that love to read and are veterans.
Right.
So, I mean, even though you may not have a great financial or literary success in your life, writers have to learn to look at other things that may, in fact, mean more.
Mark St. Pierre, we thank you as well for your time and for the book itself. It's called Of Uncommon Birth, Dakota Sons in Vietnam. Check it out and read it today. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.